Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Happy Friday to everybody across this great country. Hope you're all squared away with spring almost in the air. This is March 28th, end of March, April on the horizon, April Fool's Day as well, appropriately enough, given all that's going on. This program, as those of you who are regular listeners know, is really generally focused on immigration and national security. We occasionally delve into other issues, but that is my primary focus because as a retired senior special agent of the old Immigration and Naturalization Service, I dealt with many of the law enforcement issues that impact public safety and also national security. And it's something that really is not being focused on the way that it needs to be in the mainstream media. Whenever they conduct polls about immigration, people always just think it's about people mowing lawns, washing dishes, or doing menial labor. Very few people understand the inherent risks that failures to secure the borders and enforce the immigration laws have for America and Americans. It's really an adjunct to what the military does. And that's the reason for this program. In the wake of 9/11, I decided to take my show on the road, so to speak, and try to alert all of our fellow Americans and make our politicians accountable. I'm a New Yorker. The ashes from 9/11 landed on me and my family, landed on my home, landed in my neighborhood, and contained in part the remains of my neighbors. We are setting ourselves up for the potential for another horrific such attack. Our borders are anything but secure. We have millions of people in this country with no way of knowing who they are or why they're here. And it's not about xenophobia. It's about common sense. It's about the 9/11 Commission report and its findings. And just so that you know, there are two websites I would very much like for you to visit. First of all, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, I'm a senior fellow with a terrific organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website, capsweb.org, one word, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great working with them, as I have been for the past number of years, where I join other experts, other people with perspectives worth considering on a variety of issues. And my area of expertise, obviously, immigration is what I write about. And in fact, there is an article that if it's not up on the website today, it should be within the next day or so. And it's all about the administration's policies. And it's all about a report written by Senator Jeff Sessions, one of the few stalwarts who are on our side, who understand the real importance of our immigration laws and our borders. The article that I wrote is entitled "The Administration's Immigration Policies Create De Facto Amnesty and Encourage More Illegal Immigration." And I think it's worth your while reading it because when you find out what Senator Sessions was able to determine in preparation for this three-page report that he issued, really an alert to all Americans, it's startling. And it's especially startling when you consider that we've heard the president talk about how he's more concerned about a nuclear bomb going off in New York City than he is about what Putin might do in the Ukraine. So with all of these concerns about national security and public safety, to think that the administration and politicians, frankly, from both sides of the aisle are still refusing to do what's necessary is absolutely mind-boggling, hard to understand. And in fact, today I'm expecting to be joined by a friend and an amazing American, Major General Paul Vallely, retired, a man with an incredible 32-year career in the United States Army. He headed up Special Forces. When you look at the guy's resume, my goodness, if you divided it into three equal parts, then three people were able to share this man's life's work. Each of them would have bragging rights, except he did it all by himself. Of course, when I say by himself, it wouldn't have been possible without the amazing and heroic, dedicated men and women of the armed services who served with him. But the point is that this guy is truly an American hero. I met him at the Tea Party Convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We had him on the program 2 weeks ago, and there was so much to cover that I've invited him back. So I am expecting that he will be calling in momentarily, but this is a program that you're going to really want to pay attention to. There is so much going on, whether we're talking about the Malaysian airliner still missing, whether we talk about what's going on in the Ukraine, whether we talk about the president and the way that he's using his pen and phone to circumvent the laws of the United States to leave us vulnerable from the perspective of immigration. It is a circus. And sitting here doing this program, I sometimes feel as though I need a whip and a chair. I feel like I'm the circus master trying to figure out where in the world we go with everything that's happening right now. Totally mind-boggling. Pardon me. And it's something that we really need to be mindful of, because these issues really pose a serious threat to all of us. And that's something that's just not tolerable. You know, when you look at what Senator Sessions, in fact, warned about, how right now there's absolutely no integrity to the immigration system, how this administration is actually encouraging more and more people to come to this country illegally and then do whatever they feel like doing and violate our laws, violate the borders with impunity, and I truly mean impunity. This makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, folks, because the reality is that we have aliens taking more jobs than we can create in the United States. Whatever jobs are being created, that number is actually smaller than the number of authorized foreign workers that we are admitting into the United States each and every month. How in the world is this going to work out successfully for anybody? And we're doing it all because of the unbridled greed of corporations and the politicians who, frankly, are beholden to the people making those campaign contributions. It's real crazy. So this is something that we really have to be mindful of, that those immigration laws are supposed to protect innocent lives. They're supposed to protect the jobs of American workers. And none of this is happening. And it's not happening by design, just about by design, because you have the Republicans saying, well, we don't want to put millions of people on a pathway to citizenship. We just want to give them permission to work. And you have the administration and the Democrats arguing that they should be given a pathway to citizenship. And everybody is using the excuse about whether or not the Mexican border is truly secure. And those of you familiar with the stuff that I've been writing about for the longest time know that we're a country of 50 border states. It's not just the Mexican border that we need to be concerned about. Any state that has an international airport or a seaport or has access to the 95,000 miles of meandering coastline of this country needs to be considered as much a border state as are those states to be found along the northern or southern borders of the United States. And this idea that we're going to continue to bring in ever more foreign workers when more and more Americans are losing their jobs, finding that they're unable to maintain their wages and so forth, makes absolutely no sense. And so these are the things that we need to really focus on. In any event, I see that General Vallely's on the line. Let me bring him on. General Vallely, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Mike. I'm sorry I'm a little late.
That's okay. There's no demerits for tardiness. I hope everything is okay in your world.
Well, I had a few things come up, and I'm a little delayed behind schedule, so happy to be back on your show again.
Well, I'm honored and delighted to have you join me, and I got to tell you, folks, this is a guy that does not quit. I always think of a juggler when I think of the way you're doing stuff these days. For a guy who's retired, I mean, I'm a good one to talk, but here you are allegedly retired, and I've never seen anybody more on the move than you are.
Well, at 74, Mike, I've just learned how to juggle.
And
they call it.
Welcome to the circus. Well, where do you want to get started? You know, you were it was wonderful of you to join me a couple of weeks ago, and even in spite of the fact that you were visiting a friend who had fallen ill and was in the hospital, and I mean, you're an amazing guy. Drove all the way from your home in Montana to Washington State and somehow managed to juggle that phone call outside the emergency room, and here you are again juggling. So you're the general. You tell me where you want to pick up. Do you want to go with the Malaysian airline business, or do you want to look at the findings of Jeff Sessions about how this administration refuses to enforce the laws or secure the borders? There's so many, I won't say wonderful opportunities, but so many topics of opportunity to delve into.
Well, let's talk about the national leadership team, because
okay, let's
that affects
do that.
That affects everything, Mike, that's going on. And across the board, when we look at securing the border, securing America, gutting the military, not being able to respond in a very positive way to the Syrian situation, Egypt, and, of course, now the Ukraine, and that we are a international embarrassment now, and this isn't coming from me, this is coming from the overseas people that I've talked to and have been with, because I've been in the Middle East four times in the last 18 months, and most recently in November in Egypt with General al-Sisi, and I'll be going back to Egypt in 2 weeks. So it's an embarrassment that we have an agenda going on in Washington, D.C., which is weakening America. We have, secondly, incompetence and ineptness of the highest level in the State Department, in the CIA, the senior levels of the Pentagon, and certainly the White House. So if you flow that all down into situation around the world, is America more secure now than it was before? Answer, absolutely not. Are we making any positive strides? No, cannot identify any. Are we making any diplomatic victories? No. We've left Iraq, all that human resource and money that we put in there for the zero return to America after all of our wonderful troops over there did a marvelous job, did what they were told. Over 4,000 killed over there, over 40,000 wounded. Now we look at Afghanistan. We're going to pull out of there, of course, and you look again, no gains for America other than the expenditure of a lot of resources. So we've got serious problems in our national leadership team. That's why it needs to be replaced as soon as possible.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, when you talk about senior leader, are you talking about presidential appointees or are any of these people holdovers from the George W. Bush administration? Or?
Yeah, the only holdovers you really have, Michael, as you know, are people that are reappointed back into positions.
Right.
Or the bureaucracy. These are the GS, government service people,
yep,
that we have throughout the administration. And, of course, many of those are careerists. Many of them do a great job. But I'm talking really about the top-tier levels.
So these are the ones that Obama tapped on the shoulder and said, you're it.
Right. You got it. The appointments of all of those major departments that have been designated, like Hagel, he's a total disappointment, totally unqualified for the job. You take Hillary Clinton, who really, when you think about it, has never accomplished anything in government. You take
Forgive me, but what
Brennan.
Difference does that make?
Yeah, what difference does it make exactly?
By the way, I just had a weird thought. I've been following the
company. I'm just going to say we had incompetence in the Bush administration and Clinton, too. But there's been a carryover, I think, Mike, of incompetence.
You know, I just had to raise the one point. I've been following this thing with the Blade Runner trial in South Africa. Maybe he should invoke the Clinton defense. What difference does it make? She's dead.
Yeah, there you go. And see how that settles down. So
it's
what
remarkable,
I'm most disappointed in is the leadership, the lack of.
It's remarkable that she would have the chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn, at that hearing to make that statement that they're dead, so what difference does it make?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's astonishing. So Where do we go from here? Do you see any bright lights on the horizon in terms of the Republicans?
Well, I see some that perhaps give me a sort of a confidence when I look at Trey Gowdy.
Right.
I look at Mike Lee. I look even some of the things that Ted Cruz is doing and standing up for. I appreciate the fact that Larry Jordan from Ohio, and we have some very, very good people. I haven't been able to identify any on the Democratic side yet that are going to be running to fill some of these positions. But certainly it comes to the realization also that we have to term people out. And we have got to get to the point where, and my recommendation is, congressmen serve for two terms for 4 years. Senators serve for two terms for 6 years. Supreme Court justices serve for 10 years. Nobody should have a permanent position in our government. So those are things that we can do. And then through our studies, we found that 47% of the U.S. government could be done away with and we wouldn't miss it. So I go over all of these different things, but these are positive things. Good leadership can change, and we don't have that. Even in Congress, they can't get anything done.
Well, maybe it's better that they don't when you look at what they're trying to do, especially in the Senate. I mean, it's remarkable with comprehensive immigration reform, so-called. You know, I you're certainly the right person to ask the question. I'm reading material that the administration wants to end the production of the Tomahawk missile and a couple of other weapon systems. What is your take on that? I mean, I find that disturbing, but I wasn't in the Army, and you were a leader. So what is your take on the necessity of and the value of the Tomahawk?
Well, it's been very valuable. If you've seen the reach that it has, you know, from our ships and from our aircraft, it's a very advanced weapon system that could be used anywhere, anytime in the world to hit any target within 24 hours. But now you're gutting the Army down to a level around World War II. You're cutting the number of ships in half from what they were under Reagan. You're cutting the essential part of the structure of our military. And people make the military. We're cutting back their benefits. We're purging officers out of the military. We're purging First Amendment rights, purging of documents where you can't even say radical Islam. And this is an agenda of Obama. And it is being carried out to forever change America. Now, my theme of all my talks, Mike, now is America is at a crossroads. What road is America going to take? Are we going to follow progressive socialism, as this administration is doing? Or are we going to follow a constitutional road where we stand by our Bill of Rights and our Constitution and the values that made America? And we're going to stand by capitalism versus socialism. So those are questions each America has to answer. Which road do you want to go down?
And can you see any benefit to, I mean, are you hearing the same rumors or reading the same material that they're talking about ending the Tomahawk? Can you see any reason why it should be ended, if that is the case?
Well, that's just one weapon. No, it should not be ended unless they can go, excuse me, Michael, to a more advanced technology using that kind of a system, because it can be used, as you know, off of naval ships.
It gives you standoff capabilities, so your own people don't go in harm's way. They can project the weapon from great distances.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's about projection of power, and that's what it's always been about. Certainly you can see Russia and Putin exercising an extension of their reach of power. You see China now developing one of the best blue water fleets, which they've never had, very advanced shipping. You see the Iranians developing very advanced shipping and small aircraft, as well as destroyers and other naval aircraft that have gone into the Atlantic Ocean last month for the first time. So here all of our adversaries are increasing and strengthening their military structure and capability, and we're degrading ours. So what does that tell you?
I mean, it's so worrying. I've never seen this happen before. I know that Jimmy Carter gave us problems, but not to the extent that we're seeing under the current administration. And I do believe that Carter was the mentor, or maybe more properly, dementor of this administration.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have a more incompetent guy in there. I thought Carter was the most incompetent guy, but this guy, Obama, is the worst president in my mind. And in my historical background, and having lived 74 years now, that I've ever seen in my life. And other leaders see him. Putin sees him as a empty suit. His rhetoric, the talk he gave at The Hague last week, was all utopia, not based on fact or not based on realization of what the Russians are attempting to do as they continue to take down neighboring countries and rebuilding the Russian Federation.
Now there was just a news blast that came across within the last half hour or so that Putin now wants to have a diplomatic solution to the Ukraine. I'm not sure where that's going to go.
they're great at propaganda. Russia has always been great, and the communists are great at propaganda. We're not good at it. We just seem to be experiencing a large sense of lack of common sense and a forward strategy. Putin's got a strategy, believe me, and he's executing it, playing hardball, and we're playing softball.
Well, it's just incredible. And then you have Obama cutting by two-thirds the money that I call DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender. I suspect I won't get an argument from you on that one. And so they've cut by two-thirds the funding for the New York City Bomb Squad, even as Obama was talking about his concerns about a nuke going off in New York City. I've got to read a quote from Chuck Schumer, though, because Chuck really drives me straight up the wall. And this was as per CBS reporting here in New York. This was 2 days ago. And he was responding to what the DHS is doing in terms of the funding for the New York City Police Department. And Schumer comes out and says, "Hard to believe in the can you believe this department," Schumer said. "Yesterday, the president correctly said he's worried about a nuclear weapon, and yet the Department of Homeland Security announces that it's cutting this program, which is one of our bulwarks to prevent any nuclear weapon from being smuggled into Manhattan." So we have a senator who has used supposed security along the Mexican border, and that's only four border states, and my philosophy is we have 50 border states, but he was using the ability to smuggle stuff into America as a bargaining chip, not as an absolute. But when you get to the state of New York, the state line to Schumer seems to be the line of demarcation of concern, not America's borders. Do these people have a total lack of mouth-ear coordination? Can their ears not hear what their own mouths are saying?
Well, it's that incredible misunderstanding, lack of common sense. And as Dr. Ben Carson said out here at a dinner the week before last, there's some genetics involved here. There's genes missing in a whole generation of people of the common sense gene. And I run into it all the time, and I know you do, and you'd watch these hearings on television.
Look at how
we approach the world, and there's no common sense. My goodness.
I've testified before up to 16 hearings. I think I hold some kind of a record that I think you need the patience of Job or something. But I've often lamented that they don't have listenings. They only have hearings.
Well, that's right, and they don't listen well. You were talking about Ted Cruz. I was called if I would brief Ted Cruz on the Syrian situation because he didn't understand it, as weak as mostly all the senators and congressmen are. And I told the individual, I said, listen, I would be happy to brief anybody in Congress, Democrat, Republican, on my trips inside Syria.
Sure.
But they're going to have to call me. I have gone over on Capitol Hill. You sit and wait for these congressmen, and then they'll pass you off to an administrative assistant.
Yep.
Their depth of knowledge of any one given subject, Michael, is one level. They can't even drill down two or three levels, and this is horrible. And so I said, I'll brief Senator Cruz. He's an important senator, but he's very naive in the international situation. But If he'll call me, I'll spend the time with him. But I am tired of trying to reach out to these people and give them advice that's been on information that's been attained on the ground. So there you go.
You know,
same thing with Egypt.
I had a meeting with the chairman of one of the major committees in the House of Representatives. I had a 30-minute meeting with this chairman. And I'm protecting his identity for now. I'm hopeful that he'll come around, but if not, then we'll have a different conversation on another day. But I said, why in the world is the starting point for any conversation about immigration not the 9/11 Commission report? You know, when an airplane crashes and the NTSB and the FAA come out, and the engineers come out, and the people from the airplane manufacturer comes out, they come out with a goal of determining what brought the airplane down. Was it pilot error? Was it a maintenance issue? Was it weather? Was it something that just could not have been prevented? Was there a design flaw in the airplane? Because you want to make certain it doesn't happen again, and then the FAA decides and the NTSB decides what recommendations need to be made. And it's not optional. It's not you want soup or salad. We're not in a restaurant looking at a menu. They have to, you know, take the advice and do what they're told to do to make the plane and the people safer. They said, what was the point to the 9/11 Commission if you don't even want to talk about it? Do you know I could not even get this member of Congress to acknowledge that there was a 9/11 Commission report? He kept on changing the topic. I said, why can't we discuss what the 9/11 Commission said about immigration fraud, about the need for secure borders? The Commission itself had a whole bunch of material about it, but the staff of the 9/11 Commission issued their own separate staff report, almost as thick as the entire 9/11 Commission report. It was called the 9/11 Commission Staff Report on Terrorist Travel, a monogram. And why did they issue it? Because as much as the 9/11 Commission delved into immigration and visas, the investigators and the attorneys on the commission said, you know what, there were things they left out, we need to put it in. And here I am talking to a chairman of a congressional committee. He has many years in the Congress. And I said to this guy, why in the world won't you look at the 9/11 Commission and compare what you're trying to do with what we were warned about in that report? And I might as well have been asking him about the weather in Antarctica that day.
Well,
that's astonishing.
Like
that's not a reasonable question.
No. I'll give you another relative situation. I'm not sure you've ever been inside the Pentagon for any briefings, have you?
No, I haven't. I've not.
Well, the last one I was there, I was supposed to meet a very senior person in special operations. And so as you go through all the bureaucratic process and security to get into the Pentagon, and then you have to have a escort to take you to where the office is in one of the rings, whether it be the E-ring or whatever.
Right.
And so I get in there and sit down, talking very seriously about a situation in the Middle East. And here's the senior appointee, and we're talking. And no sooner are we into a deep conversation, about 5 minutes, the secretary comes in, interrupts us. She interrupted us 7 different times during a one-hour meeting. Oh, sir, do you have another briefing in an hour? Coming in. And finally, at the end, I said, listen, you obviously aren't focused on this meeting. You're constantly being interrupted by your underlings. You can't focus. You're more worried about the next meeting you're going to in the next hour. And I got up and walked out totally understanding why they don't get anything done, even at the Pentagon. All they have are briefings and PowerPoint presentations all day. I got an email from a colonel in Afghanistan. He said, boy, first thing in the morning, this was under General Petraeus, all we do is have PowerPoint presentation. We never get out of the compound, but yet we're sending all these young troopers out on convoys and getting blown up by IEDs. But he said that most of us never get out of the compound. Well, it's the same thing in the Pentagon. They don't get out. But they had an opportunity to go with me to Egypt to meet General Sisi, and they wouldn't do it.
That's outrageous. You know, I was with some of the 9/11 family members, and one of my friends, pardon me, one of my friends, Bruce DeSalle, whose son-in-law was killed on 9/11, and Bruce is a former New York City cop, and we were having a meeting with a senior member of then-Senator Lieberman's staff, and these staffers are amazing, I have to tell you. Most of them are under the age of 30, but think they have the wisdom of Solomon.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And he started to argue with me about immigration, that I needed to learn from him how immigration is supposed to work.
Oh,
and I will
arrogant.
Never forget Bruce and these other people standing up, and the guy looks at Bruce, and Bruce is kind of a big guy. You know, when he was a youngster, you could see him playing football. And he says, "Where are you going?" He said, "Mr. Cutler got his badge before your parents created you, and I'm cleaning it up significantly, trust me." And he said, "I am leaving before I commit a felony. You're going to lecture Mr. Cutler on how to enforce the immigration laws? Give me a break." And he and the other 9/11 family members went right out the door, and I just looked at the guy, and I said, "You are a jerk," and we left. I mean, what do you do with something like that?
There was an interesting article today, and I hope I read it right, but it was on John McCain talking to an Hispanic organization in Arizona, talking about supporting the Grand Amnesty Program. And one of the article headlines that came out that if we take McCain's approach, the GOP, if supporting it, will be destroyed forever.
I have news for you. America would be destroyed forever. America would be destroyed forever. You know, and this notion about the Latino vote is, I think, some of the worst profiling and worst bigotry I've ever heard. You mean everybody whose last name is Garcia or Rodriguez is going to vote the same way and has the same concerns? I mean,
absolutely
how outrageous is that?
Yeah.
And, you know, what's so remarkable, I often read this, but I'm going to read it while you're with me tonight. It's a brief passage that was in the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel, and it's about three sentences long. It's on page 98 of that staff report, and it's under the topic of immigration benefits. Now, these are people that we're talking about that want to give people who ran the border, evaded the inspections process, lawful status and identity documents. They would not have the capacity to do so much as a face-to-face interview with these people, General. They wouldn't be able to do field investigations, but we're going to give them identity documents. And it's kind of like if you saw the business with the airplane that went down, Malaysian Airlines, these idiot journalists, so-called, said, well, two of these guys were Iranians traveling on European passports, but they're not a concern. Number one, they don't show up on any terror watch list. Well, that's brilliant. I mean, do you think that half the 19 hijackers from 9/11 would have showed up on any list a day before 9/11? And then they said, and on top of it, the one kid is looking for political asylum, so we know he's not a problem. Really? I mean, you
there
had this
you
guy, Cancy, who shoots up the CIA in 93, applied for asylum. You have Ramzi Youssef involved with the bombing at the Trade Center in 93, kills six, injures 1,000. Received political asylum. You have the Tsarnaev brothers. Now, here's what they had in the 9/11 Commission staff report. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, think of the Dreamers, by the way, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. And when you say to a member of Congress who chairs an important committee, why aren't you looking at these reports before you even have a conversation about immigration, and you can't even get a square answer to a fundamental question, what in the world do we do?
Well,
doesn't that paragraph take your breath away?
Well, it absolutely does. Hey, listen, have you heard of the latest scenario on the Malaysian jet?
No, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, this one I just got in, but parts of it make sense, some of it doesn't. It's like my nephew's scenario that a mothership came in from outer space and took it away. But this
wasn't
one,
the same one that dropped off the president 6 years ago?
Yeah. But this one is the scenario that the pilots were co-opted and paid off. there were three very high-ranking Chinese generals on board, carrying back what they considered, it's called cloaking technology. It's much like the aircraft that we have. What are they called? The you know, where you can't see them.
Oh, the stealth aircraft.
Yeah, the stealth aircraft. So it's like.
Right.
So anyhow, supposedly, when they took that left turn, and even Joe McInerney said the last things by Boeing got, it was on a northwesterly route towards India and Pakistan, that for that 6 or 7 hours that it actually went bypassed Indian radar, landed Diego Garcia, which is an island not too far from the Maldives. The Maldives, some people observed the aircraft from in the Maldives. It refueled, then flew to Pakistan. The three generals were taken away and returned to China. And so that's the latest, that it perhaps is there in the Taliban-controlled area up near Peshawar in Pakistan. What do you think about that?
My goodness gracious, wouldn't that be something that's the story that nobody wants to hear, I will tell you, because now you got to ask yourself, and what happens with the airplane now?
Well, yeah, everybody's still out looking for the debris, and there's not been one piece of debris picked up that is from an aircraft.
And what might, and so, then you have to wonder what they might use the airplane for if it is intact and on the ground.
There you go. That's the second part of it.
Which is why the Israelis went to a heightened alert.
Yeah, there you go. So that may not be all that way out there. It may, in fact, be that this crew took the aircraft and it landed in an airfield in a location such as Pakistan, and that's where the passenger may be dead, or they may be all incarcerated to some degree until they determine when to release them. But the report said the three Chinese generals were taken back to China.
They were, supposedly.
Yeah.
But
so
this
anyhow,
is the way of
that's
getting
the latest
technology.
Scenario.
But this is the way of getting the technology.
Yeah. So.
Listen, I can almost believe anything. At this point, with the way that the world has been progressing, you know, it's funny. I'll tell you something. I have a theory. You tell me what you think about this. I've believed that if you were looking at a transcript of a conversation of different people, you could guesstimate their age, even if you couldn't hear their voices, just looking at the transcript, by how often they use the absolutes or refuse to use the absolutes. Young kids will say, impossible, never, always, has to be, can't be. You get to middle age, you say not likely, not probable. When we get on towards our age, I think just about anything you hear, you're almost tempted to say, who knows, maybe.
That's exactly right.
What do you think of my hypothesis?
I'm going to have to leave you a little early. I've got to go to a dinner, and then I have to get up at 4 in the morning to go to Arizona. I've got a 6 a.m. flight, but I was going to try to stay with you longer tonight, but some other things have come up that precludes that, Michael. So if you don't mind.
No, that's not at all a problem. I wish you a safe trip. And I thank you for joining me. By the way, what did you think of my hypothesis? Am I close? About
well,
the
I
use
think
of the absolutes,
yeah.
My kids?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know, and therein lies
yeah.
our problems. But
yeah.
And once again, we have to have you back on. I hope to join you with the road show, as we come to call it, getting the word out there. And I really want you to know how much I appreciate, and I'm sure that my listeners appreciate, to everything you're doing on behalf of all of us, both in your original career with the military, and now that you're out there trying to wake up our leaders and our citizens, you know, the Stand Up America
well,
program. Is there a website, by the way, that you want to give out about the Stand Up America program?
Well, I would, yes. There's two websites we manage across the country. One is StandUpAmericaUS.org, which is one of the most advanced websites on national security and other analysis of issues of whether they be domestic or international. We have a Middle East team that feeds us information every day what's going on in the Middle East. The second, the website we manage, is the Soldiers Memorial Fund, and that's to help veterans and families and active duty people, and we've been around longer than Wounded Warriors, we do a very good job of getting money out to, for example, with graduates now from high school and college that are going directly into into the armed forces. We give them a nice check for $500 or $1,000 for each of those students. So, and that's soldiersmemorialfund.org. So I'd ask all your listeners to go to Stand Up America and the Soldiers Fund. Join us at Stand Up America. Help us out. We need your support. And our troops need the support and our veterans, so they can do that by donations to either website.
Well, that's really wonderful. Again, as I say, you're still very much leading the charge, and I guess it's in your blood and in your spirit at this point, wouldn't you say?
Well, this one growing up in a little town in Pennsylvania will do to you.
By the way, I'm heading to Pennsylvania. I'll be doing a show up there. We're going to be focusing on immigration and national security on April the 10th. So as soon as that's done with, I will be putting the link to that as soon as they have it up on the web. But Pennsylvania is a great place to come from, great place to be.
Where in Pennsylvania, Mike?
I believe they're outside of Allentown. So,
okay, up northeast.
Local
yeah.
station up there. I think it's Tony Iannello is his name. So I'm looking forward to doing that. And
excellent.
Well, you know, we've got to get the word out, and that's really what this is all about. And I don't know anybody
right.
who's working harder at it than you, I have to tell you.
Well, thank you. We try to do something each day. My new article just came out today, which I'll send you, on Obama and Putin. I think you really enjoy it, that ties in Clinton and Kerry, as well as the things that haven't been done.
You mean another reason to stay awake at night, and I'm supposed to enjoy that? Okay.
Yeah, when you get the call at 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, you'll know what to do. And then you can say in the morning, what difference does it make?
Goodness gracious. Listen, I'm not going to keep you.
All
You're
right.
so generous with your time. I have to tell you how much I appreciate it.
All right, Mike. Well, you take care, and we'll stay in touch.
Absolutely. Travel safely, and I'll speak with you when you get back.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend. So long. That was General Paul Vallely, retired. Great American, a guy who I'm proud to consider a friend. You know, this immigration issue links into all the other failures that we keep witnessing. And it's very disconcerting. And you know, I want to clear up some language that we're always hearing. The other side is very quick to tell us that those of us that want the immigration laws enforced are somehow being anti-immigrant. So let me just clear this up. And I think it's important for all of you who are concerned about the immigration issue to start to push back, because the open borders crowd, and I call them the immigration anarchists, use intimidation and deceptive language to push their agenda. The immigration laws, folks, are balanced. I jokingly say they're a little bit like God. You know, they giveth and they taketh away. The Immigration and Nationality Act is that all-encompassing body of immigration law. And what those laws seek to do is to keep out people who would pose a threat, that is to say aliens when they say people. And by the way, for those of you that are maybe listening for the first time, the word alien is not an offensive word, much as the other side would have you believe it is. Legally, according to the immigration laws, an alien is simply defined as being any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. There is absolutely no insult in that definition, only clarity. forgive me for the frog in my throat. The only people that want to make certain that we obfuscate the language are the people who are pushing an agenda that defies common sense and rational thought. You know, immigration laws do not discriminate by race, religion, or ethnicity. They purely are designed and intended to keep out aliens who pose a threat to national security, public safety, public health, the economy, and American workers and their jobs. That's it. That's all it's about. It's about keeping out terrorists and criminals, spies, human rights violators, and people who would take the jobs that Americans desperately need. How in the world can anybody vilify anybody who believes that our country should protect us from the bad guys, number one? And number two, those very same laws also permit over a million aliens to legally immigrate to the United States, be granted resident alien status and a green card that goes with it. And every year, those same laws provide for the naturalization of what's generally a population of well over a half million new citizens. Those laws also allow for the entry of tens of millions of non-immigrant visitors, whether they come as tourists, whether they come to do business, whether they come as foreign students. That's all in the law. So when you talk about the immigration laws that I want to see enforced, those laws are balanced. It's not just about who we're going to keep out, but who we're going to let in. And it's about, in fact, letting in more lawful immigrants than the rest of the world combined. There is nothing anti-immigrant about the law. And when we fail to enforce those laws, folks, very often the people who suffer the worst violence are the members of the same ethnic immigrant community as that criminal alien who gets into the United States. Case in point. Earlier today, it was announced that an individual by the name of Juan Garcia was arrested in Nicaragua. He was wanted for the murder of his girlfriend and her little three-year-old toddler son. Why did he kill the mother and child? Because he and a couple of his dirtbag cohorts believed that this woman had spoken with members of a rival gang. They were members of MS-13. MS-13 is one of the most violent and pernicious transnational gangs plaguing the United States today. They have their origins in El Salvador and Central America, also Los Angeles. They are very violent, and they're very active out on Long Island here in New York and in other parts of the country. They're very active in Virginia. In fact, in my old days when I was involved with a different organization besides CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, we did a study on the impact of MS-13 on public safety and crime in Virginia. This is a major threat to public safety. And these characters, these thugs, thought that this woman was talking to somebody in a rival gang, and they decided to go ahead and not only kill her, but to shoot her little boy, 3 years old. And according to witnesses, the boy was shot once in the head, and somehow he managed to get back up on his feet, and this piece of garbage, allegedly, grabbed the kid, held him down so they could fire a second bullet into his head and kill him, right after they had killed his mother in front of him. They were here illegally, members of MS-13. This guy is from El Salvador. That's not to say everybody from El Salvador is a bad guy. That's not at all what we're talking about. But it is to say that if we had not allowed him to get into the United States, and if he couldn't have remained in the United States, then this murder would not have happened. And the woman happened to be Hispanic. Exactly the pattern that I saw during my 30 years with the old Immigration and Naturalization Service. And it's not just the gangs from Latin America. It's the Russian mob. It's Asian organized crime. It's the Jamaican drug posses. It's across the spectrum. I've arrested members of Israeli criminal groups also. One of the arrests that was truly significant was the night that I grabbed a guy wanted for murder in Israel, and we made certain that he went home to face trial for killing a woman in Israel. This is not about race. This is about aliens, people who are not citizens or nationals of the United States who are in our country and do tremendous damage, kill and injure people and commit other crimes. So when you go out there and say we need to enforce the laws and you're told, oh, you're a xenophobe, we really and truly have to grow a spine, folks, and we've got to push back against those outrageous statements. We are not anti-immigrant. We are pro-enforcement. And I want to see someone stand up and say to me with a straight face, We should never enforce laws that are designed to keep criminals and terrorists out of our country. We should no longer enforce laws that make certain that American workers don't get displaced in the labor pool by foreign workers, and not just illegal aliens, but look at the H-1B visa program. You know, Ted Cruz, and I understand that General Valley thinks Ted Cruz has some leadership qualities, and that may well be the case, but I will tell you that Ted Cruz proposed an amendment to comprehensive reform that he called Cruz 5 that would have increased the number of H-1B high-tech visas by a factor of 500%. Today, the cap is set at 65,000. If Cruz has his way, it will go to 325,000. And under comprehensive reform, for the first time, the spouses and adult children of H-1B visa holders would be entitled to work in the United States on any job that they're qualified to do, even if there is an abundance of unemployed Americans who desperately need to do the same job. Think about how crazy that is. So if you have a guy with an H-1B visa, and let's say there's no fraud involved, let's say he truly has a skill as a biologist, as a programmer, as an engineer, something that's not available in the United States, which is what the immigration laws say, you know, that you should not be bringing in workers when you have Americans who are ready, willing, and able to do the job immediately and in the same locale where the job is being offered. Give the job to an American first is the idea. But let's say that we have somebody with an H-1B visa, and let's say he's legit. He truly has a skill that's in short supply. We need him. But now he has three kids who are in their 20s, and they're auto mechanics. And let's say that this guy is settled into a community where there's 1,000 unemployed auto mechanics. It doesn't matter. His three sons will be given employment authorization documents, and they will have as much right to work as an auto mechanic as any of those 1,000 unemployed Americans. Makes no sense. It makes no sense. This is not why we have immigration laws. This is not the way to get Americans working. And yet most politicians favor this sort of thing. And if you go meet with these politicians, they're all reading off the same sheet of music. Believe me, I've spoken to enough of them. And I'll tell you what the arguments are, because you're going to hear them. Go out there and arrange a meeting, and you're going to hear it. And they're going to tell you, number one, we can't deport them all, so what are we going to do with them? And my answer is, we don't stop everybody who drives recklessly, so do we tear up the laws that deal with speeding or reckless driving? You know, when we found that drunk driving was a serious problem, people were dying because some guy would get tanked up and jump in the car and go roaring off and mow people down or crash into vehicles. If they dealt with drunk driving the way they want to, quote-unquote, solve the immigration problem, then we would raise the acceptable blood alcohol level so that if anybody got stopped drunk driving, then they could legally say, oh, no, this guy's not drunk, because his blood alcohol level wasn't high enough to be considered legally drunk. Well, years ago, it used to be one part, I think it's one part per million or whatever the ratio is. They lowered it to 0.08. They didn't say, let's make it 2.0, so now almost nobody's legally drunk, but that's what they want to do with immigration. We're going to solve the problem of illegal aliens in the United States by just giving everybody a green card. Now they're no longer illegal, so now we've solved the problem. This is the craziest so-called solution that I've ever heard. So we're told, though, you can't get rid of them all. We got to do something with them. Where else have you ever heard someone make a statement so crazy as that? But that's what they'll tell you. And then they tell you that the American people don't have the heart or the stomach to see 11 million people rounded up and deported. No one's saying you need to do that. But when you tell politicians, look, if you take away the jobs and the driver's licenses and the ability to own property if you're here illegally, the answer is, oh, that won't help. And when you ask them why, they just shrug their shoulders and they just say, because it won't. So you can't have a meaningful conversation with someone like that. So the way that conversation needs to end, if you have such a conversation with a politician, ladies and gentlemen, is to simply let that person know that come the election, not only won't you vote for them, but you will support anybody who runs against them. Because anybody who thinks that this is a worthwhile viable solution needs to be removed from office. Last year, between $100 and $200 billion, with a B, was wired out of the United States by foreign workers sending money back to their home countries. If it's closer to that $200 billion figure, and I believe it is, because there's all different kinds of statistics floating around out there, then understand that when you're done with the multiplier effect, because this is money lost to the economy, the impact on the economy is to increase the deficit functionally by more than $500 billion. And that's before you take into account the Americans who lose their jobs and then lose their homes to foreclosure, go from being tax-paying consumers who pay taxes to people on welfare and all the safety net programs who lose their disposable income, so they not only stop paying taxes, but they stop being viable consumers. So think of the damage that does to the economy. I mean, it goes on and on and on. We could get almost every American working by tomorrow morning if we could enforce the immigration laws without creating any new jobs. We keep on hearing the politicians say we're going to create jobs. It's time that they liberated the jobs. But they don't want to say that because too much money is being pumped into the political campaign coffers by the Chamber of Commerce and by people like Zuckerberg and Gates and all the people in the high-tech industries, because they are all looking for cheap labor. That's what this is about. It's about cheap labor. It's about the potential for votes. It's about a mistaken notion that somehow this is appropriate. You know, we are a nation of immigrants, but for a little bit of clarity, the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. And it makes absolutely no sense for the United States to continue to bring in more foreign workers than the number of new jobs that we're creating. It makes no sense to bring in foreign students, and we now bring in close to 500,000 every year, when you have American children living in poverty, when you have soldiers coming back from combat, whether they're wounded or not, they're not the same. They've been traumatized. They're suffering post-traumatic stress. If they aren't suffering physical ills, and many of them are suffering those as well, well, why not provide an education to these great American kids? Why not provide an education for children living in poverty? Because if you take a child living in poverty and you don't give that child an alternative, and the child is tired of living as they grow up, they're tired of living in abject squalor, it's now estimated that 1 in 5 American kids, go to bed hungry at night. Well, if you're going to bed hungry every night, and if there are rats running around the house that you live in some tenement somewhere, and if there are so many roaches in the apartment that when you flip on the light switch, you're treated to what we used to, with a bit of sarcasm and gallows humor, refer to as the moving wall, where you can't even tell what the color of the paint on the wall is because the walls are encrusted with bugs. And I've been in such apartments. Let me tell you, it is really... it freaks you out. I mean, you know, your flesh starts to feel itchy and crawly. And where the stench from all the horrors in those buildings stay in your nostrils forever. If you're living under those conditions and you're, you know, a young adult, what are you willing to do to get out of that poverty? Maybe the better question is, what won't you do to get out of that poverty? So you have the cycle of poverty leading to more violence, leading to more poverty, leading to more suffering and more victims, and we're building more jails and imprisoning more of our people. We need to break the cycle. And bringing in foreign students doesn't break the cycle. And the unemployment and poverty rates are highest among America's minorities. And then the immigration anarchists, the open borders crowd, will say, well, if you want the laws enforced, you're a racist. Really? Well, I can tell you that I have been in enough tough neighborhoods, and I have seen that poverty up close and in person. And it's distressing and disturbing, and it hammers America's minorities the hardest. So how in the world is it racist to look at those children, American children, black, Hispanic, so forth, and say, you know, we need to change the equation so these children have the opportunities to get out of poverty and take decent jobs, legal jobs, jobs they could be proud of, by getting them college educations so we can break that cycle of poverty and violence. There's nothing racist about that statement. there's plenty racist about people talking about the Latino vote. I mean, the idea that just because you know someone's last name, you know everything you need to know about them? Really? We really need to stand up to what's going on, folks. There is a primary coming. And you have plenty of Republicans who have said, well, we're not going to give these folks, these illegals, these undocumented aliens, a path to citizenship. No, no, no. We'll just give them employment authorization. We'll give them an identity document, and we'll let them work. And if they do that, we will be giving people identity documents without being able to verify their identities. What could possibly go wrong? You'll be giving them the opportunity to compete directly with American workers, and you'll be giving them an opportunity to send even more money out of our economy. Boy, could you imagine any better outcome than all those three things? Displace American workers, send more money out of our economy, and by the way, maybe at the same time, countries that aren't our friends, how to be engineers and nuclear physicists, even though, at least on paper, we have a policy of nuclear nonproliferation. If this makes sense to you, I suggest you get some mattresses or other padding and hang it up on the walls of your house so you don't hurt yourself when you bang your head against the wall. It's insane to think that it's unreasonable to enforce the laws. And when we're told that illegal aliens are simply undocumented workers, let's be very clear about what we're talking about. Undocumented means that they don't have any official paper documentation to attest to their true name, their true date of birth, their true country of citizenship, or how, when, and where they got here, who they're affiliated with, and what their ultimate goals in coming here might have been. That's very dangerous. But we're told they're undocumented. Well, that's what undocumented means. But there's something even bigger going on because these aliens are uninspected. They came through the back door because there's something in their background that under our immigration laws would render them excludable. Maybe they were just coming to work. Okay, well, that creates problems, but that would be relatively minor compared to other issues. You may have a fugitive from justice who killed a bunch of people in another country. You may have gang members, terrorists, people who are fugitives in the United States. This guy, Garcia, who killed that mother and child, did something that most transnational criminals do. There is an escape hatch they can disappear through. And what did he do? He went to Nicaragua. Why did he go to Nicaragua? To get away from the long arm of the law in the United States. And the only reason, when you read the accounts in the newspapers, that he finally went to the U.S. Embassy inside Nicaragua was because he was concerned that somebody was going to kill him, because even within the gang, there were a lot of people who were angry that he participated in the murder of a three-year-old child. Whoopee. Whoopee. But meanwhile, to flee from law enforcement, where did he go? Another country. American citizens don't have that escape hatch, but transnational criminals and international terrorists do. That guy, Emil Kanzi, who shot up the CIA in 1993, having applied for political asylum, once he carried out that hit on the CIA, he hopped on an airplane and went to Pakistan, thinking that he had evaded the long arm of the law. What he wasn't counting on was that our guys would track him down and put the cuffs on him and drag him back here, where he was put on trial, found guilty, and executed. But that's the pattern. They immediately jump on an airplane if they're transnational criminals or international terrorists, and they head for their home country because they know their home country will generally welcome them back. Generally. There are some countries that won't give us passports, criminal aliens that we arrest here, because they don't want criminals going back to their home country. But the bottom line is that these folks have an advantage over even American criminals because they have that escape hatch. And this guy, Juan Garcia, availed himself of that escape hatch. These are the issues that the politicians need to be made to answer for, folks. These are the issues. And if, as I fear, rather than 12 million illegal aliens, and that would be a big enough number, imagine if, in fact, we have between 30 and 40 million illegal aliens who would participate in comprehensive reform. And imagine most of those people barely have an education. They're not going to be able to support themselves. They're going to be relying on safety net programs because of that. All this so that the outfits that depend on lots of cheap labor – members for unions, members for, and not all unions are bad, by the way. Some unions are very good. It depends on the union. But understand that there are people feeding at the trough. They see in those numbers the potential for monetary gain or for political leverage. And so that they can make that money or gain that leverage, they're willing to destroy the United States. Not because we're letting in immigrants, but because we're letting in potentially at that point tens of millions. And then the story that we hear is, well, they're already here. So it wouldn't impact the labor market. Well, let me tell you how that's a false argument, because I saw this in 1986. Illegal aliens take menial jobs. They're treated like trash. It's outrageous. I used to get furious to see the way these folks were treated. Very often swindled out of wages, under dangerous conditions, long hours without overtime, and off the books. And then when you legalize them and they go back to their boss and say, hey, Charlie, I'm going to keep working for you, but not for $6 an hour. Prevailing wage is $12 an hour. The boss turns around and says, you think so? You're fired. You're fired. So then what do? They wind up on safety net programs, or they wind up going to other factories where Americans are working, and they'll go to the boss and say, how much does that guy make? Because I can do the same job he's doing. I did it for 5 years. And the boss says, oh, he makes $18 an hour. And this guy says, I'll work for 12. And there are bosses who will fire those American workers and hire the newly legalized, and now we wind up displacing American and lawful immigrant workers. And we don't know who these people are because, again, they had been undocumented. Nobody's able to do a real background investigation on them and so forth. I mean, from every angle, it makes no sense. But the politicians will give you these false arguments. We can't deport them all. The American people don't want it to happen. And so it goes. Abraham Lincoln ever so eloquently described this country as being a country of the people, by the people, and for the people. How in the world can that be the case today when politicians are far more concerned about bringing in more foreign workers, knowing damn well the impact that that would have on American workers and their families? We really need to get busy. We need to get the politicians to understand that we are on to them. If, by the way, you become aware of any opportunities for me to go out there and get a message out there about immigration, then please let me know. I also want to spend a couple of minutes just talking to you very quickly about the CAPS website, because I do a lot of writing there. There was a couple of interesting articles worth noting, because it's some place that I really would like for you to go is to go visit capsweb.org. You know, we've all seen what happened to California. And believe me, what's happening in California is happening across the country. There's a film coming out about Cesar Chavez, and there was an article that was posted on the CAPS website this past week about that. Now, it's remarkable. I met Rosario Dawson, very pretty young lady. I went down to San Diego to a university with MSNBC a few years ago to debate comprehensive reform. And for those of you who don't know Rosario Dawson, she's a very tall, statuesque young lady. She was in Men in Black 2, and she was in Unstoppable. There's a whole string of films. She's a pretty good actress. I like her acting. I don't like her politics, though. And she was very pleasant, you know, gave me a nice little hug and a kiss on the cheek after the debate was over when we were in San Diego. But she's part of this group called Voto Latino. They've come up with, I don't know if Voto Latino is doing the film, but I understand what this is about, and it's pushing a political agenda. And Cesar Chavez, who started the United Farm Workers Union, was adamantly opposed to illegal immigration. Cesar Chavez is no longer alive. But what Cesar Chavez talked about was how by bringing in foreign workers, whether it's from Mexico, Latin America, wherever, wages were being depressed among American migrant workers. Bad and meager as those wages were, it got worse. And he was 101% adamantly, unequivocally opposed to illegal immigration. I mean, if you wanted to see this guy froth at the mouth, all you had to say was illegal aliens, and he would have gone insane. Well, now there's a film out about Chavez, and from what I've seen from Coming Attractions, they're going to paint Chavez as somebody who was sympathetic towards illegal immigration. This is insane. They're taking a man who is dead, who can't stand up and say, no, you're putting words in my mouth, I never said it, and they're twisting the truth to make it appear that he was an advocate for illegal immigration where nothing could be further from the truth. There was a very interesting article about it in capsweb.org. You need to read it because it will show you what we're dealing with. The other side has no scruples. The truth is simply an impediment to their goal. The goal is to eradicate America's borders. Our borders and our immigration laws are our first and last lines of defense. So what you're looking at is a willful effort by our opponents who will stop at nothing, putting false words in a dead man's mouth, making accusations about those of us who understand the real importance of the immigration laws and attempting to vilify us, using bullying tactics. The list is endless. This is not an honest debate or an honest discussion. This is about dominating through intimidation. And I'm going to tell you, I, for one, will not be intimidated, nor should you. This is America. And the First Amendment speaks not only about freedom of press, freedom of speech, and freedom of religion, but about the right to seek redress of grievances. And boy, oh boy, if you don't have grievances, check for a straight line EEG. And it also speaks about the right for peaceable assemblage. Well, guess why the Founding Fathers were so adamant about having that right for peaceable assemblage? It's because they understood that you cannot have a democratic government, democrat process, without discourse, debate, and argument, if need be. But they said, do it peaceably. In other words, leave your guns, your clubs, and your knives at home. Have that discussion. Raise your voice. Maybe yell at the other person. But don't go too far. Do it peaceably. But let's have that exchange of ideas. And when people have to keep using deceptive language and changing deceptive language in an effort to try to win at all costs, then you know that that's a person not worthy of your trust. Because anybody who has integrity and who's honest uses the factual language that's there. I don't change my language depending on the argument being posed by my opponents, but they do. They do. You know, when I made a point on a TV debate a number of years ago, and I said, well, undocumented means that these are aliens who can't prove who they are, it didn't take 2 days. The other side started to refer to illegal aliens as being unauthorized, kind of like Simon Says, you know. Oops, you didn't say Simon Says. You're out. It's about deceptive language. So we went from undocumented to unauthorized. What next? It's really important that you stay engaged. By the way, I'm also writing, in addition to CAPS, I'm writing for another website called the AmericanOutrage.us. I have a couple of articles in the works for them. This is about providing the perspectives that are almost impossible to come by in the mainstream media. That's why I do this program. That's why I write for CAPS. And that's why I'm writing for that other side, America, AmericanOutrage.us. This is about getting the word out. And, of course, you can always visit my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, and find out what's really going on. Get the unvarnished truth. Maybe Jack Nicholson said you can't handle the truth, but in America, folks, you must certainly have the truth. And my job is to bring that truth to you. I'm looking very much forward to getting together with you. Same time, same place next week, 7 o'clock right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. For the meanwhile, folks, I want you to remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. Have a great weekend, everybody. Hope you have warmer weather than we've been having of late and that spring starts to spring in your neck of the woods. Have a great weekend, everybody. So long.